The Murders in the Rue Morgue. I first saw Monsieur C. Auguste Dupin when I was living in Paris. I met him in a bookshop as we both searched for the same rare book, and we soon became friends. I was impressed by the huge number of books he had read and by his vivid imagination. Dupin had a talent for putting facts together and finding logical explanations for difficult situations. Because of his skills, the police often asked him to help them solve mysteries. One day, we read in the newspaper about the murder of two women. Their bodies were discovered in their house on the Rue Morgue. The evening paper reported the story as follows. At 3 o'clock this morning, the inhabitants of the Rue Morgue heard terrible cries from the house of Madame Lespinay and her daughter Camille. 8 of the neighbours broke down the door. But by the time they entered the house with 2 policemen, the cries had stopped. As they rushed up the stairs, they heard 2 voices from the top of the house arguing angrily. However, when they reached the second floor, the voices stopped. Everything was quiet. The men ran from room to room until they reached a locked door on the 4th floor of the house. They forced the door open because the key was on the inside. When they came into the room, a horrible spectacle met their eyes. The room was in a terrible mess. The furniture had been thrown about in all directions, and much of it was broken. The mattress had been removed from the only bed and thrown into the middle of the floor. The razor on the chair was covered in blood. Some grey, human hair, also covered in blood, lay beside the fireplace. The hair looked as if it had been pulled out by the roots. On the floor, they found a valuable necklace and 2 bags containing nearly 4,000 gold francs. The men could find neither Madame Lespinay nor her daughter. They noticed a lot of soot in the fireplace, so they decided to look in the chimney. It was here they found Camille's body. She had been pushed up the chimney feet first. The neighbours pulled hard to free the body. It was still warm. There were deep scratches on her face and dark contusions on her neck, as if she had been strangled. Although they searched the whole house, the men found nothing more. They made their way to the small garden at the back of the building. There they found the body of Madame Lespinay. Her throat had been so badly cut that when they tried to move the body, her head nearly fell off. The newspaper reported that there were no clues to the mystery of these horrible murders. However, the next day's newspaper had some additional information. The police interviewed many people, and the paper reported each person's story. Jules Mignot, a banker, told the police that Madame Lespinay had opened an account with his bank 8 years earlier. 3 days before her death, she took 4,000 francs in gold out of her account. The money was sent to her house. Pauline Dubourg, a laundress, said that she had worked for the 2 women for the past 3 years. She reported that the old woman and her daughter got on well with each other. Pauline thought Madame Lespinay was quite rich, though they had no servants. Pauline had never seen anyone else in the house. Many other neighbours said the same things. No one knew of any visitors to the house. No one knew if the 2 women had any relatives. The front windows were rarely opened, and the ones at the back were always closed, except for the windows in the back room on the 4th floor. Isidore Mousset, a policeman, stated that he had been called to the house about 3 o'clock in the morning. As he forced open the door, the screams suddenly stopped. He started to go upstairs when he heard 2 angry voices. One voice was quite deep, the other was higher and very strange. The deep voice, definitely not that of a woman, was speaking French. He could not understand what the high voice was saying, but thought it was speaking Spanish. Henri Duval, a neighbour, was one of the men who entered the house. He gave the same evidence as Mousset, except that he thought the high voice was speaking Italian. He was not sure if the high voice belonged to a man or a woman. He knew Madame Lespinay and her daughter. He was sure that the high voice did not belong to either of them. Mr. Odenheimer, a restaurant owner from Amsterdam, was passing the house when he heard the cries. He also entered the building. He thought the high voice was that of a Frenchman. He could not understand what was being said, but he thought that the high voice sounded scared as well as angry. William Byrd, an Englishman, was one of the first to go upstairs. He heard the voices arguing and the sounds of people struggling. He was sure that the high voice was speaking German, though he did not speak the language himself. He believed the high voice might have been a woman's. Alfonso Garcia, an undertaker, living in the Rue Morgue, did not go upstairs. He was too nervous. He heard the voices and identified the deep voice as a Frenchman and the high voice as someone speaking English, although he himself did not speak English. Dr. Paul Dumas examined the bodies early in the morning. They were now both lying in the room where the daughter had been found. Camille's body was terribly bruised and cut just below the chin. Her face was a horrible colour. Her eyes were bulging, and she had almost bitten off her tongue. The doctor believed that Camille was strangled by an unknown person. The body of the mother was horribly mutilated. All of her ribs and her right arm and leg were broken. Dr. Dumas thought the murderer was a man because no woman would have been strong enough to cause such injuries. The head was almost separate from the body. The throat had been cut with a very sharp instrument, probably a razor. All of the men who had entered the house agreed that the door of the room where Camille's body was found had been locked from the inside. None of the men saw anyone in the room when they forced their way in. All the windows were closed and locked from the inside. The newspaper reported that the chimneys in all of the rooms on the fourth floor were too narrow for a human body to pass through, so no one could have escaped that way. There were no back stairs by which the murderer could have run away. Such mysterious murders had never before been committed in Paris. The police had no clues and no suspects. Dupin became very interested in the murders. "What do you think?" he asked me. "What do you make of it all?" "I agree with the Paris police. It seems impossible to solve these murders," I answered. "I do not see how the murderer can be found." "The Paris police are not always as clever as they would like people to think," Dupin continued. "They do not always use the right methods to solve a crime. Let us carry out some investigations into these murders. It will give us some amusement. We will go to the house in the Rue Morgue and examine it ourselves. I know the head of the Paris police, so we will not find it difficult to get the necessary permission." We got permission and went immediately to the house in the Rue Morgue. It was far from where we lived, and it was late afternoon by the time we arrived. Before we went in, we walked around to the back of the house. Dupin examined everything very carefully, although I could see no reason for doing this. We finally knocked on the front door and were allowed to enter. We went upstairs to the room where Camille's body had been found. The two bodies were still there. Nothing had been touched. Everything was exactly as it had been described in the newspaper. Again, Dupin examined everything very closely, including the bodies. We then went out into the garden. A policeman was with us the whole time. It was dark when we left. On the way home, Dupin went into the office of one of the daily newspapers. He did not speak to me about the murders until noon the next day. Then he asked me suddenly, "Did you notice anything peculiar at the scene of the murders?" The way he said the word peculiar made me shiver, although I didn't know why. "No, nothing," I replied. "At least nothing more than we read in the newspaper." "The newspaper has not noticed the unusual horror of the murders," said Dupin. "The police think that these murders cannot be solved because they cannot find a motive. They are puzzled by several things. The voices that were heard, the fact that no one was found upstairs, the windows which were all locked so that there was no other way out, and the terrible violence of the murder. In a case like this, you must not simply ask what has happened. Instead, you must ask, what has happened that has never happened before. Because they are such unusual murders, I have solved them very easily. I looked at Dupin in astonishment. I could think of nothing to say. I am now waiting for someone to arrive, he continued. Although he may not have killed the women himself, he was involved to some extent. He may not come, but he probably will. If he comes, we will have to keep him here. Here are two pistols. I hope we will not need them. But if it is necessary, we both know how to use them. I took the pistol and put it in my pocket. I hardly knew what I was doing. Dupin continued. First, we have the voices. Everyone said that they were not women's voices. Therefore, the old lady did not kill her daughter and then herself. So, the murders were committed by someone else. Did you notice anything peculiar in the evidence about the voices? All the men agreed that the deep voice belonged to a Frenchman, I said. But they did not agree about the high voice. No, explained Dupin. What was peculiar was that an Englishman, a Dutchman, a Spaniard, and a Frenchman all described the voice as the voice of a foreigner. Each one was sure that it was not the voice of one of his countrymen. What a strange voice it must have been. And no one heard any words, only sounds. This fact helped me to decide what to look for in the room where the murders took place. Now, let us think about that room. How did the murderer escape? Let us examine each possible way of escape. The murderer was still in the room when the men entered the house and started to go upstairs. But the door from the room into the passage was locked, I said, and the key was on the inside. Correct, said Dupin. I examined the chimneys, but after a couple of meters, they are too narrow to allow a cat to get through, never mind a human being. So, we are left with the windows. No one escaped through one of the windows at the front of the house because the crowd in the street would have seen. That only leaves the windows in the back room. But the police said that both the windows were tightly shut, I cried. The police tried to open the windows, said Dupin. The first was shut tightly and could not be opened. There was a very strong nail through the frame of the window. The police concluded that this was how the window was locked. There was a similar nail in the second window. So they decided that the murderers could not have escaped through the windows. But I knew that this was the only possible way of escape. Therefore, I examined the windows very carefully. I took the nail out of the first window, but it still would not open. I realized that there must be a hidden spring that really locked the window. If someone had climbed out through this window, he could have closed it again, and the spring would have kept it shut. But he could not have put the nail back in place. So the killer must have escaped through the other window. The springs were the same on both windows, so there must have been a difference in the nails. The second nail seemed just as strong as the first, but when I touched it, the head and the top part came off in my fingers. The rest stayed in the hole. I put the head and top part back in the hole, and it looked like a perfect nail. The break could not be seen. I pressed the spring and raised the window slightly. The nail went up too. I closed the window and the nail seemed perfect again. The window probably closed on its own after the murderer climbed out. The spring kept the window shut, and that is how the police made their mistake. Unbelievable, was all I could say. I was full of admiration for Dupin's analytical mind. The next problem, said Dupin, was how the killer got to the ground. I solved this problem while we were examining the back of the building. The police thought that there was no possible escape this way, and they did not examine the area very carefully. But I noticed that there was a lightning rod about 1.5 meters from the second window. It would be impossible for anyone to reach the window from this rod. But I also saw that the shutters were about 1 meter wide. These could give an excellent hold for someone's hands. If the shutter of the second window were fully open, it would only be about 0.5 meter from the lightning rod. A very brave person could jump from the rod to the shutters and enter the window this way. Of course, he would also be able to exit the same way. But it must have been someone very agile. Remember that. And remember also the strange voice that was heard and the terrible violence of the murders.
I thought that I was beginning to understand what Dupin was suggesting. My friend went on with his theory.
Let us go back to the room itself. The killer did not take any of the gold in the room. All of the money mentioned by Monsieur Mignot was still there. Therefore, the fact that the women were murdered soon after Madame L'Espanay received the money is just a coincidence. In my opinion, there was no motive for this horrendous crime.
Now, what about the violence of the murder?
There is something very unusual about this kind of behaviour. It took great strength to push the body up the chimney. 5 men were needed to pull the body out. In addition, the old lady's head had been almost cut off using just a razor. What strength! Think now of all the things I have spoken about. The mess in the room. Superhuman strength and agility. 2 violent murders with no motive, and a strange voice which could not be understood by men of different nationalities. What do you think about it all? It was a madman, I cried. A madman has done this terrible thing.
It is a good guess, said Dupin, but you are wrong.
He showed me some hair that he held in his hand.
I found this hair in the hand of Madame L'Espanay.
What do you think it is?
He showed me some yellowish-brown hair.
Dupin, I said nervously, this is not human hair. I never said that it was, said Dupin. But before we go any further, look at this drawing I have made. It is a drawing of the fingerprints found on the neck of Camille L'Espanay. Try to place your fingers over the fingerprints I have drawn on the paper.
I tried to do so, but I couldn't.
These marks were not made by a human hand, I said.
Now, said Dupin, handing me a book, please read this page.
It was a description of the large orangutan that lives in Indonesia. It described the orangutan's huge size, its strength and agility, its fierceness, and its ability to imitate humans. I immediately understood the full horror of the murders. The description of the animal's fingers is exactly like your drawing, I said. But there were 2 voices arguing, and one of them was definitely the voice of a Frenchman.
That is true, said Dupin.
I believe that a Frenchman knows about the murders, but that he did not take part in them. The orangutan may have escaped from him. He may have followed it to the bedroom, but with all the trouble, he could never have recaptured it.
I am sure that the animal is still free. Last night, on our way home, I stopped at the newspaper office and asked them to put this advertisement in today's newspaper. I hope it will bring the Frenchman here.
He gave me the newspaper. I read the advertisement. Caught in the Bois de Boulogne Park, a large orangutan of the Borneo species. The owner is a sailor on a Maltese ship. He may have the animal back if he can identify it properly. Call at number 33, Rue Dunod, Faubourg, Saint-Germain. How do you know, I asked, that the man is a sailor working on a Maltese ship?
Dupin replied, I found this piece of ribbon under the lightning rod.
It is the kind of ribbon that Maltese sailors use to tie their hair back. If he is not guilty of the murders, he should not be afraid to come here. He will think, I am a poor man, but my orangutan is worth a lot of money. I can sell it and get the money. It was found in the Bois de Boulogne, a long way from the Rue Morgue. The police have no clues. Who would ever imagine that an animal killed the women?
Just then we heard footsteps on the stairs.
Be ready with your pistol, said Dupin, but do not use it until I give you the signal.
There was a knock at the door. Dupin called out,
Come
in a loud, cheerful voice. A man came into the room. He was obviously a sailor, tall and strong, with a brown face and a thick beard. He carried a big wooden stick, but apart from that, he was unarmed. He bowed and said, Good evening, to us in French.
Sit down, my friend, said Dupin. I suppose you have come about the orangutan. He is a very fine and very valuable animal. How old is he?
The sailor took a deep breath and said, I don't know exactly, but he can't be more than 4 or 5 years old. Have you got him here?
Oh, no. We had nowhere to keep him here. But he is nearby. You can get him in the morning. Are you prepared to identify him?
Of course I am, replied the sailor. And I will pay you for your trouble.
Well, replied Dupin, that is very fair. What should I ask for? I know. You will give me all the information you have about the murders in the Rue Morgue.
While Dupin was saying these words, he walked to the door, locked it, and put the key in his pocket. Then he took out his pistol and placed it on the table. The sailor's face turned red. He jumped to his feet and grabbed his wooden stick. However, the next moment he sat back down again. He was as pale as death and did not say a single word. I pitied him from the bottom of my heart.
Do not be afraid, my friend, said Dupin kindly. I know you are innocent of the murders in the Rue Morgue, but I also know that you are involved in them. You did not steal anything, so you have nothing to hide. But you must tell me everything you know.
The sailor did not reply for a few moments. Finally, he said,
I will tell you everything I know, but I do not expect you to believe even half of what I say. I am innocent, and I will tell the truth even if I die for it.
This is the story that the sailor told us. He had recently been in Borneo, where he had captured the orangutan. After a very difficult voyage, he brought it to his home in Paris. He kept the animal locked up in a room, hidden from his neighbours. He was hoping to sell the orangutan for a lot of money. On the night of the murders, he had come home very late. He found that the orangutan had broken out of its room and was in the bedroom. It was trying to shave, as it had seen its master do. The orangutan was holding a razor in its hand. The sailor was terrified at seeing a sharp instrument in the hands of such a fierce animal. For some moments, he did not know what to do. Finally, the sailor picked up a whip, which he often used to control the orangutan when it was very fierce. But when the animal saw the whip, it ran out of the bedroom, went down the stairs, and jumped through an open window into the street. The sailor followed the animal for a long time. The streets were very quiet, as it was almost 3 o'clock in the morning. The orangutan turned into a dark street behind the Rue Morgue. The animal noticed a light in the open window of Madame L'Espanaye's bedroom on the 4th floor. It ran to the building, climbed up the lightning rod with great agility, grasped the shutter and swung into the room. It all happened very quickly. The sailor was both happy and anxious. He had an opportunity to recapture the animal, but he was worried about what it might do in Madame L'Espanaye's room. Therefore, he decided to follow the animal. Because he was a sailor, he climbed the lightning rod without difficulty. But when he reached the height of the window, he could go no further. He would have fallen if he had jumped. All he could do was to lean over and look inside. The scene he saw inside the room was so grotesque that he nearly fell down from the lightning rod.
The huge animal had seized Madame L'Espanaye by her hair. It was waving the razor in front of her face like a barber. The daughter lay still on the floor. She had fainted. The screams and struggles of the old lady made the orangutan angry. With one blow of his huge arm, he almost cut her head off. The sight of the blood made him even angrier. He grabbed the daughter and pushed his fingers into her neck until she died. Suddenly, the animal noticed his master's face at the window. The animal's anger changed to fear. The orangutan ran around the room, looking for somewhere to hide the bodies, breaking the furniture as it moved. Finally, the orangutan seized Camille's body and pushed it up the chimney. Then the animal threw Madame L'Espanaye's body out of the window. As the orangutan approached the window, the sailor slid down the rod and hurried home. In his terror, he no longer cared about the fate of the orangutan. The voices that the men heard in the house were the sailor's exclamations of horror and the wild noises of the orangutan. There is not much more to add. The orangutan was eventually caught by the sailor himself. He sold it to the zoo for a great deal of money. Dupin told the story to the police, and he pointed out where they had made their mistakes. Although the head of police was a friend of Dupin's, he could not help being a little embarrassed at the way things had gone, and made a few remarks about people minding their own business. Dupin did not bother to reply.
"Let him talk," he said to me as we left the police station. "It will ease his conscience. My methods of solving a mystery are better than theirs, and that is all that matters."